Welcome to Between Us, the podcast all about your mind, your heart, and your relationships. In this podcast, I dive into your long-distance relationships and how it's affecting you on a deeper level. I'm your host, Bree, and I'm excited to learn more with you. Hello, welcome back to episode 2 of the Between Us podcast. I'm your host, Bree Robinson, and today I'm joined by Becky Knudsen. Becky is a therapist in family and relationships.
Marriage and family therapy.
Yes, that's right. So I'm going to let her tell you about just kind of about her job.
Sure. Yeah, I'm a licensed marriage and family therapist. And so I've been licensed for about 20 years now. And I work mostly with couples and dealing with, my specialty is infidelity and like rebuilding trust when like trust has been broken in relationships. And also how trauma and addiction affect relationships.
Okay, cool. Yeah. Why did you choose to go over to like the therapy route of career?
Because for me, I always just really valued relationships. And even though I was strong in math and science in school, what I would think about in my free time was why people acted the way they do. What was it about the family they grew up in? You know, why do people act certain ways in relationships? I was just fascinated with relationships, you know? And I also realized how important family is in terms of everything in our lives. So that was a big deal for me.
Yes. So I think that's really good for this podcast because that like really goes into the relationship and how to build those and how to have strong relationships when you're long distance. Okay, so let's start today by talking about just kind of the chemicals in your brain. So, you have dopamine and serotonin in your brain, and those are your stress chemicals. So when the people that you love are gone from you, those chemicals are lessened and, you have decreased happiness. On top of that, oxytocin is, creates a sense of trust. And so without it and your person next to you, it's harder to trust them. So do you have anything to say on like the stress, anxiety, and trust?
Yeah. I mean, I guess if you think about it, Bree, like, humans are bonding animals. We're meant to be in relationships. And out of all the species, humans are most dependent on other humans. Like, like the human baby is the most vulnerable creature in existence. Like the baby cannot survive on its own. So we're wired to know that for our survival, we need to be in relationships and deep relationships with people we can trust. And so when we're not, then like, you know, serotonin levels are off, dopamine levels are off because we're not feeling safe, you know? And so oxytocin is sort of what helps us feel like we're safe in the world. And it's interesting how even like an 8-second hug or eye contact starts releasing that bonding hormone. Yeah. And that's when we feel most secure in the world is when those oxytocin levels are high. And that's the result of relationships.
Yes. So that kind of goes back to, I think, episode 1 with Stella that talked about how you need your support system. You need people in your life that even when that person you love is gone, who else can you go to? So how do you think you can develop that support system around you with just friends, you know, because obviously you don't like love them like a couple, but you still love them. You need to love them close and you can trust them.
So if you listen to Sue Johnson, she's an awesome relationship expert. And she says the two most important questions that any human has for another human is, are you there for me and can I trust you?
Yes.
So we have to have people in our world that we know are a yes to those two questions. If I need you, you're there for me. And yes, I can trust you. And if we have anybody in our life that fits that criteria, we just feel more secure and stable in the world.
Yeah.
And so even if the person isn't right next to you, if you still have that belief that if I need them, they're there for me and I can trust that they're still going to be loyal and faithful and so forth, even if they're thousands of miles away, then we'll still feel safe and secure.
Yeah. I think it's important to remember. So having that support system, you need real trust with them, but also your significant other. So that like before they go long distance, I think that is such an important part of a relationship. So building that trust and that love is important so that you can leave each other and still feel that and find ways to feel that because you know each other. So can you speak to that a little bit?
I mean, it just makes me think that it's really important if you're going to embark on a long distance relationship that you have some sort of plan established. Like, are we still going to be loyal to each other? Or how often are we going to talk? If I'm having a hard day, can I still get in touch with you? You know, are we going to date other people or are we going to be monogamous? You know, those types of things will help you feel more secure.
Yeah.
You know, so you have to sort of prepare ahead of time, and then just how often you can talk and how quality those conversations are makes a huge difference also.
Yeah. So does that make sense? Yes, it does. Yeah. So it's vital to be able to have those conversations before they leave.
Yes.
Because you can't go into it like, we're going to figure this out, because in reality, it's hard to figure stuff out long distance.
Right.
Like when you can only like, you know, talk on the phone or whatever. Like I feel like, at least for me, like, it's hard to have those like harder conversations and those deeper conversations when you aren't physically next to them.
Right, right. So. Although I think about, you know, because Jake and I, my husband, we got to know each other in a long distance relationship. And so we didn't start off with that, with that commitment, I guess.
Yeah.
But because our conversations got deeper and more quality, that commitment came with time.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? But it was something we were always talking about, you know, in terms of what we wanted and were we going to date other people and that type of thing. So it can be done the other way around, you know, but you just want to really establish what, you know, what you are and how much you're going to be there for each other. And then do you have other people in your life that you can trust as well? If
the,
you know.
So speaking to that, dating other people, what are your thoughts on that? Because I know, like, it can really, like, be like, oh, are they, like, liking them more? Like, it can really, like, lead to that insecurity.
Yeah.
So do you think it's wise to date other people while you're in a long-distance relationship? Or does it kind of depend on the couple?
It depends on the couple and what your what your agreement is. Oh, that's a tough one. I mean, I'm thinking personal experience when, because Jake and I dated for just a week before we went different directions to different states. And I remember telling him, I'm not ready to not date other people, you know, like we've just met. I'm not ready for that kind of commitment. And it was the sweetest thing, because he was like, that's totally fine.
Yeah.
I'm not going to date anybody else, but you can, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And it only took a few weeks of dating other people before I was like, all I do is think about him when I'm with these other people.
You
know
you knew.
Yeah. But I loved his confidence that he was like, you could date other people, but I'm not going to, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So that worked really well for us. I don't know if that really answers your question.
Oh, it does, yeah.
But I think if one person is feeling like you're my one and only and the other person is not, that can get really tricky and it could lead to a lot of jealousy. And I know that the statistics show with long distance relationships that can be one of the cons.
It's a jealousy, behind
piece.
It.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And even in committed couples, like married couples, when there's long distance relationships, there's high rates of infidelity because you know, loneliness sets in so much, and then if you've got somebody right in front of you, it's really easy to fall into that.
You just go to that. Because we talked about, like, the types of intimacy and how you need each one.
Yes.
So
yes.
Do you want to talk about that a little bit?
Sure. Yeah. There's when we think of intimacy, often we think of just sex, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But there's several different types of intimacy. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, psychological intimacy is, can I trust you? You know, and that's the baseline. And then we've got verbal intimacy, emotional, spiritual, intellectual, and physical. Yeah. So the advantages in a long distance relationship, you could build a lot of those levels of intimacy, especially that verbal intimacy, you could really build up in a long distance relationship, but the physical intimacy is going to be really hard.
Yeah.
And so if that's more your love language or the intimacy that most speaks to you, then you could be more vulnerable.
Yeah.
You know, in a long distance relationship.
Because I think, you know, going back to the chemicals, like, you seek those in your brain to just, like, feel, like, fulfilled in a sense. And so you need that, and you search for that.
Yeah.
So.
And the thing about those levels of intimacy, if you were to stack them, they would make a triangle, meaning that they kind of lend, like, you have to have one before you can have the next.
Yeah.
And so psychological is the base level, and then so verbal
trust.
Is next. Yeah. Physical intimacy is actually the top level. It's the most impactful, but it doesn't really work unless everything else is in place.
Okay.
But what tends to happen when people are in, you know, relationships where they're able to see each other every day, sometimes that triangle gets flipped upside down and people spend most time on physical intimacy.
Yeah.
And then it becomes a very unstable pyramid.
Okay.
You know what I mean? So it's almost like a benefit if you have this long distance relationship because you have to build those base levels before you could add the physical intimacy, and that can lead to more stable intimacy long term.
So in the long run, like, long distance can be better because it forces you to go back to the base and to just remember, do I trust you? Do I really love you? Mm-hmm. Instead of just being like, oh, this is the person that's right next to me. Like, you know, it's not the physical.
Absolutely. And I loved that for Jake. And I remember just feeling so grateful that we had all this opportunity to just get to know each other without the physical stuff getting in the way. Yeah. You know, and it wasn't even about what are the fun things we're going to do. It was just like, we're just talking. We're just getting to know each other.
You just get to know each other, get to know that and build that trust from the beginning. Yeah. So do you think in a world where it's, you know, Tinder or you meet online and do you think it's possible to never meet this person in person and create a strong relationship?
I think it's possible, but it's going to be wobbly because what you do, if you only get snippets of people throughout the day, you don't get to see what it looks like when they're exhausted and frustrated and snappy. Do you know what I mean? You're only getting like the best side of them. And what you can end up doing is the little snippets that you get, you start filling in the gaps with what you assume about the person. Yeah. And then when you actually come together, your assumptions could be wrong.
You expected.
So, I mean, I would just recommend for anybody that's getting to know each other completely virtually that they spend some time, like a good chunk of time physically together before they make a long-term commitment to really see if it matches when I'm with you all the time.
Yeah.
And we're getting on each other's nerves after being each, you know, around each other all day long. You know, things can really be different.
Our brain will build that person in our head and it's like, are we building the correct person that we want to be with?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Okay. Yeah, I think that's important to remember because, you know, it can work. You can make it work if you truly love them, but you need to know if you love all pieces of them.
Yeah, yeah.
Before you can't just love the good, because that's a relationship. A relationship won't work if you just love the good about them.
And then if you think about again, like what happens in the brain, just the act of eye contact with another person, which you could almost do through a video or, you know, FaceTime or whatever, but you actually don't get true eye contact with the person. There's something different chemically that happens through a screen.
No, it's so real.
And then also touch, you know, even if it's just holding hands or anything like that, like the oxytocin in the brain, that's just not going to happen when you're not together in person. It's just something different happens in our bodies and something different happens chemically.
Yeah, well, I think, because I grew up in Pennsylvania, so I think of my best friend and I, when we were apart, it was like, sometimes, like, she was my person, and she was my ride or die, and so there was times when I'm like, I just need a hug from her.
Yes.
And, like, that was so hard, but it's also, I could go back to her because I trusted her, and I loved her, and, you know, when we saw each other next, like, we gave each other the biggest hug, you know? Yeah. So it's not even just, like, romantic and intimate relationships, but it can be friendships, too, it can be family relationships, it's anything. And you just, you need all those pillars. Even, you know, just touch can be just a hug, you know, like
it's so important.
It's just, like you said, us humans are social creatures. Like, we need that. Mm-hmm. We, like, rely on that.
Well, and even when it comes to when we're in any sort of suffering or sadness or distress, it's fascinating when I work with couples how when one person is hurting, really the most important thing that the other person can do is, like, wrap their arms around that person.
Just be there.
Know? Yeah, and there's something about that physical touch and the holding that just calms our system down, you know, and it's that feeling of when I'm hurting, I have a safe place to fall. And it can be done somewhat through words, but the physical aspect of comforting somebody really is irreplaceable.
Yeah. Well, there's a statistic that I love that I don't know every detail, but it's that the women's brain is always moving. Like, it doesn't slow down, and men can just kind of, like, turn it off. Like,
wouldn't
that
be so great?
I know. I'm like, what? Like, I'm thinking about something all the time.
Yeah.
But the time that a woman's brain slows down the most is when they feel safe.
Yes.
But it's, like, physical safety. Yes. Like, if you are, like, wrapped in a hug, that's when it's going to slow down, and you're gonna be like, oh, this is, like, okay, because your brain is always moving.
Absolutely.
Until you're, like, it doesn't need to anymore.
Yeah.
So I think that's so cool to think about, just like that it's that physical closeness and just like that feeling of safety and trust, like always back to the trust in this relationship.
Absolutely. So. Absolutely. And I think like one thing Jake has gotten really good at when we're fighting is just to say like, can I hold you? You know, which seems really counterintuitive, especially if I'm mad at him.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It works every time. You know, it's the most amazing thing because then I just calm down.
Yeah.
And, you know,
that is amazing.
Feel safe again.
Yeah. Well, and those emotions are always going to be there. So how do you think, because, you know, like, especially in long distance, you're going to feel sad and you're going to feel angry and maybe even jealousy or longing.
Yeah.
How can you take care of yourself when you're feeling so much pain and so much hurt because they're not there?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I think in any, whether a person is nearby or far away, when you're in a relationship, self-care is so important.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Otherwise, it becomes a codependent relationship. And so we've got to find that... What I think couples need to strive for is interdependence, which is I do the things that I know keep me grounded and regulated, and I have my routines to take care of me. And even when we're distressed, it's really important to be able to take a step back and offer yourself self-compassion and self-nurture, you know, even just, you know, kind of giving yourself a hug or just telling yourself, I'm so sorry for your pain. Mm-hmm. Like, that's a really
embracing
good way.
It and just acknowledging it.
Yes. Yes.
Okay.
We have to be able to do that for ourselves. And if we rely solely on another person to give that to us, it becomes really imbalanced. And so in an ideal world, we can give it to ourselves, but it also feels good to get it from another person as well. So I think if you're in a long distance relationship, you might have more opportunities to strengthen that muscle of self-care, self-compassion, taking care of you.
Yeah.
And so that is a cool opportunity.
Yeah.
You know, as long as it doesn't become, I don't need other people anymore, because that's not a healthy place to live.
Yeah. Well, I think too, just as a high schooler who's like, everyone, like, we talk about dating all the time, and one thing I commonly hear is love yourself before you try to love someone else.
Yes.
I think that's so important, just like being able to have like self-confidence in yourself and knowing what makes you happy so that you can go and love somebody just as equally and, like, you know, even more sometimes. But it's because in the end, a relationship is two people that make up one. Like, you come together, but you're still your individual person. So you need to know yourself and to help yourself. So that you can have a strong relationship.
Yeah. So I think it's a balance that, you know, there's physical things we can do on a daily basis. Like, you know, are we meditating? Are we journaling? Yeah. Are we eating healthy? Are we exercising? You know, all of those things that kind of keep us regulated. But then you have to get really good at when we're hurting or when, you know, anything negative is going on inside of us. The research shows that we need to be the first person that's taking care of that. So it's almost like the parts of us that are hurting, we need to be the primary caretaker for those parts of us.
Yeah.
And I don't, if you're familiar with internal family systems therapy, they, they refer to, like, anything within us that's hurting, it's like they refer to it as a part. And it's almost like we have to think of that part as a little human inside of us that we can connect to and take care of and nurture. And so the theory is that we should be our primary caretakers for those parts, and then our partner can be the secondary caretaker for those parts. And so it's just it's a good opportunity to practice it. And even if the person is with you 24/7, you have to get good at that, that skill.
So. Yeah. Well, even just going back to, like, some, like, the coping things to just come inside yourself more, I think for me, journaling has worked, just putting it all out and just being like, hey, this is what's happening. Here's the good. Here's the bad. Like, here's how I'm feeling. I feel like that's such a good coping mechanism.
It's so good. And so if you take it to the next level, you journal and get really authentic about all those deep feelings.
Uh-huh.
And then you figure out, okay, I want to picture that whoever just wrote all this is a little person inside of me.
Okay.
And how do I take care of that person?
Yeah.
So instead of just flailing with all the negativity, you come in with, like, now how am I going to take care of that part of me that's hurting?
Yeah.
So
I think it's important too to, like, think about, like, you have, like, the two circles of, like, this is what I can control, this is what I can't control.
Yes.
And, like, if you're trying to control things you can't control, it's not going to help you at
Absolutely not. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Do you, sorry.
No, go ahead.
Do you think that sometimes people might feel guilty because they're like, I'm hurting so bad, but they don't want to go to their significant other? Do you think that's a thing of trust? Because I feel like I've seen that a lot where people are like, I just can't go to them because I don't want to hurt them and make them, like, worry about me.
Yeah.
Is that, like, how do you think you can combat that?
I mean, there's so many dynamics that could be at play there, you know?
Yeah.
Is it because the significant other really isn't good at holding space for you?
Mm-hmm.
Or is it because I feel like I don't want to be a burden on anybody else, you know? So I'm just going to hold it in. There's a lot of things at play, but I think ideally, for a relationship to be really strong and functioning, both should feel like you know, when I'm hurting, the other person is there for me.
You and need that to know you can go to them.
And that it's healthy to let them know. And, you know, you want to think of it not in terms of, like, I'm hurting, you have to fix it. But okay. I'm hurting and I want you to know.
Yeah.
You see the difference there?
Because in the end, like, you love each other and you look for that support.
Yeah, and if you think about the word intimacy, like, into me see. So if I'm not letting you see into me, we're not going to have intimacy.
Yeah. Do you know what I mean? Love that. You need to show them. Because, like we talked about, like, you need to know all parts of them, but that's also, like, internal. Like, what are they thinking? Like, what goes through their head?
Absolutely. Yeah. And then, you know, but if you come into it with, like, I'm going to let you see inside of me, and it's your responsibility to fix, you made me feel this way and you have to fix it, that becomes codependency.
Okay,
you know what I mean? But if it's like, I'm aware of what's going on within me, I'm taking care of what's going on inside of me, but I want to let you in and I want your support in this process of taking care of myself, that's when it becomes really beautiful.
Yeah.
You know, and then the other flips, you know, when you go too far that direction, it's like, well, this is my stuff. I shouldn't have to burden you with it. Yeah. So I'm just going to keep it in.
Yeah.
You know, you want to find the sweet spot in the middle.
Yeah. Because in the end, like, it's your stuff, but it's also theirs because they love you and they want to know. I feel like anyone I love, I'm like, I want to be involved in your life. Like, I want to know what's going on. And it's so important to remember that, like you want to be there. Yeah. Like, everyone wants to help another. Like, if you love them, it hurts to see someone you love sad.
Absolutely.
So, and, like, in the end, just tell them and, like, talk through it, you know?
And that's the number one way to create intimacy is to be vulnerable. You know
okay,
I mean?
Yeah.
Like, I'm going to let you see the parts of me that maybe I feel ashamed of. I'm going to be vulnerable. And it's funny how we're afraid to be vulnerable because we think we'll be judged or people will love us less. But it usually goes just the opposite, where when you see somebody get really vulnerable, it just makes you fall in love with them more.
Definitely,
right?
Well, I think just random, but I feel like it's such a big thing, like, boys don't cry, like, all that thing. I'm like, when I feel like everyone I've talked to, if a girl sees a guy cry, it's like, oh my gosh, that's the sweetest thing ever. Yeah, it's like, I'll marry you now.
Yeah.
But no, it's just like, it's really sweet to see, like they trust you enough to just, like, show that emotion because it's a human emotion. Like, everyone's gonna hurt at some point. And so it's important to, like, acknowledge that.
Absolutely.
For everybody.
Yeah, and unfortunately in our culture, men are so trained to, like, always have to be strong and don't show weakness. You know, the only negative emotion they're allowed to show is anger, and it just makes it so they feel really alone in the world.
And that should not be the way, especially with the people you love. Like, you need to support them, and, like, you know, because they're human. It's not like they're a guy, they're not sad ever. Like, they're gonna get sad, so you need to support them. And, like, I don't know, I think in the end, if you remember that you love each other, like, just remember that, and, like, you'll have their support. So kind of along those lines, a long-term depression is something, because a long-term relationship or a long-distance relationship, it's going to have the ups and downs. Like, there's going to be good days, and, like, I think when you first start out, it's going to be really hard just getting used to it and figuring it out, but then you'll slowly get it, and you'll get in a rhythm, and you're going to figure it out. You'll have good days, and some days are just like, I just miss them. How can you keep it so that those bad days don't continue forever? Because that's not going to help you, and, like... So what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, no, I'm just thinking how loneliness is the most painful of all the emotions, right? And the Surgeon General has compared loneliness, like, the effect that loneliness has on our health is the equivalent of smoking 15 cigarettes a day.
Wow.
You know, just in terms of, like, you die younger, you don't do as well, you're higher, you know, you're more prone to depression and other physical ailments. So you don't want to underestimate what loneliness can do to you, but... I think if you're able to have, because you won't have, in terms of time together, you won't have quantity, but if you could make the interactions you do have as bonding and connecting as possible, that will help with the loneliness.
Quality.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And so quality time, and then, you know, I think you just have to really bump up your self-care. And so, you know, the top things that fight off depression are... exercise, healthy eating, adequate sleep, meditation, gratitude. So if you just are very intentional about practicing those things, and then making sure you have other in-person connections, you know, with quality people, like, really bump up your support network during this time, that should keep it from dipping into long-term depression. Although, you know, there's some people that are just going to have a chemical propensity to fall into deeper depression. And yeah. So that's when you want to seek medical help.
Yeah. Know? And that's okay. Cause like, you know, going to therapist is, it's good. Like,
absolutely.
I think like I can say like therapists, like they do help. Like they're not like, I think there's such a negative thing. Like, oh, therapist is weird. And like going to see one means you're like bad. And it's just like something's wrong with you. But in reality, like they're someone that you can go to because you trust them and like you, like they're going to help you. And, you know, they're there for you. They're not against you, and they're just, they're going to help you be happier.
I mean, I'm such a believer that, you know, going to therapy is like going to the dentist. You know, mm-hmm. would you only go to the dentist when you start getting cavities or your teeth are falling out of your head? No, you go regularly to take care of yourself, you know? And a therapist, it should just be something that we all have on hand. I mean, it's really important for you to find one that you really connect with, because not all therapists are created equal. So you want to find one that is the right fit for you.
Yeah,
but,
exactly.
But especially if you're in a long distance relationship and you're missing like that eye contact and deeply connecting with somebody in front of you, a therapist is a great alternative for that, you know, and just to sort through everything that's going on in terms of, I don't feel safe, or I feel the jealousy, or I'm just lonely, or whatever it might be.
Yeah.
Definitely.
So in the end, like, you went through that school and you know how to help them, like, go, like, through what's happening, and, like, sometimes we don't know how to help ourselves, and so therapists are great to, like, just be that aid and, like, that assistance. Sometimes it's like a crutch. Like, it's just someone you can rely on when you don't know what else to do.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And I'm a believer that, I don't know, like, doing your own work is a lifelong journey. It's not, you know what I mean? It's not like I'm going to go to therapy for 6 months and I'm cured forever. Like, you know, I'm somebody that'll be in therapy for the rest of my life and hopefully my family members will too. It's
Well, it's so important. And in the end, like, life is ups and downs. Like, it's not gonna, you're gonna go for, you know, 6 months and then it's never gonna be bad again. Cause you, like, you might have these techniques to help, but there's so many new situations and new things, and especially just in one relationship, like there's so many things that can like arise and be like scary when they arise, be like, what am I supposed to do? And these people, they know. So
absolutely.
Yeah. I think also just along the line of therapists, like, you need good friends too.
Yes.
That maybe they don't, they're not trained, but they're making sure that you're eating and you're exercising and you're getting out of bed, and like, they make you feel like loved, when you're sad like that.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. The more people you can feel deeply connected to, the better you're going to do in life.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah.
Yeah. So I think it's interesting, kind of pivoting a little bit. It's said that love is a painkiller. So when that's gone, if that's where that sadness comes from, is because we don't have that painkiller anymore.
Yeah, yeah.
Because love is such a big thing. So yeah, like, what about, like, have you seen people with that physical pain? How do you, like, because I know sometimes that's like unbearable, and it's just like, what, like, it's so heavy.
Yeah. And you're talking about when they can't be with their loved ones.
Yeah, even when they, like, they leave, like, I think initially that's when it's hardest, when they first leave, or like, they come back to visit and then they leave again. Like, it's heavy, you know?
It's super heavy. I know. I mean, one of my favorite quotes is, you know, that the only way to soothe the only way to soothe the negative emotion is human connection.
Okay.
You know, so when you say love is a painkiller, it's kind of that same concept. When we're in pain, when we have another human with us, that's the only thing that eases the pain in a healthy way. Otherwise, we have to revert to like numbing out or addiction or unhealthy ways to soothe the pain. And so when we have that regularly, we do best. And then when that person leaves, the brain takes a long time to readjust to the loss of that human.
Yeah.
And I think about even with, you know, my son Connor, who's in Ecuador right now.
Yeah.
You know, our family's still adjusting. And we know he's in a good place, and we know he's happy, and we're all happy for him. But there's just a hole in our lives and in our families that we don't know what to do with. I'm sure your family's
My family's the same thing. My brother's in Argentina, and it's just like, he left, and it was like, we'd walk into his room and be like, wait, Jason's not here. We're like, where'd he go? You know, he's supposed to be there. We're like, so it's, there's a hole, and you need to figure out.
And I think it's like, you know, when we think of the word grief, we think of somebody has died, but grief is the loss of anything. And so even if somebody's gone temporarily, you still have to grieve that loss. And so that means you have to allow yourself to cry when that feeling comes, and you have to allow yourself to feel the sadness and the anger and the craziness. And I think the more you just journal about it and process it and talk about it, the more that will help your brain readjust to it. And you know, that I mean, they say that anytime you choose to love somebody, you're putting yourself at risk, because there's always a chance that you could lose that person. And when you love somebody and you lose them, there's always going to be pain there.
Well, I think too, like, because there's going to be pain because they don't disappear. Like, you have those memories and you have those feelings that you, like, remember with them. And you're going to go back. And I think often times people are, like, watching old videos or reading old texts. And, like, I'm not saying that's bad, but I feel like that can sometimes just put you in a deeper hole of just, like, oh, my gosh, this is so bad. They're not here. Because in the end, our brain doesn't know what to do. So basically, our brains, they're always scanning. They're looking for the people we love, because in the end, we want to know where they are in case we need them. Like, we as humans need that. And just that, like, knowledge of, oh, they're right here. So if something happens, they're there, you know? And so I think that when they're gone, it's like your brain's like, what do I do? Like, I don't know where they are. I don't know what's happening. And your brain just freaks out, and it's so confusing and so upsetting sometimes.
Well, it makes me think of the concept of object permanence, you know, like when children's brains are developing, they learn at a certain, you know, they go through a phase where, like, when mom disappears, they think that mom is dead and gone and they'll never see mom again, and babies freak out. That's why they go through that separation anxiety phase, until they learn the concept of object permanence, which is she can go, but in my mind, I know she still exists. She'll come back. And I think each of us have different levels of object permanence in our mind. That's why some people can do better with separation than others can, you know? And I don't know the research on why people have different levels of that, or if there's any way to change that. But I think to remind yourself, if you're somebody that tends to be more panicked, you know, to continue to remind yourself they're still here. We will still see them again, you know. And that could even work when somebody dies, you know, if you have that belief that, like, they are still here, we just can't see them, you know. That can help in that process.
And just remembering that, I think, is so important, that, you know, they love you, they're going to be back. They didn't just, like, leave you forever. Like, it'll be okay. So, I think that it's important to remember that, you know, distance is hard, but it's not permanent.
For sure. And then to still give yourself permission that even if it's not permanent, it still hurts now. And it's okay to be sad and cry about it. And the more you could offer yourself compassion for that, instead of, like, why, you need to get over this, you know, but offer yourself, I'm so sorry, I know this hurts, it's okay that this hurts, that just means you love deeply, you know, it can help ease the pain when we're going through it.
So. I think it was Winnie the Pooh that said, like, how good is it that I have something that makes saying goodbye so hard?
Oh, I love that. Might have been Winnie the Pooh.
I can't remember. But it was just like that's so good. Like, you found someone that you love and you trust. And so, saying goodbye is hard. And, like, it's not going to, like, get easy, because you're going to want to remember them. And you're like, well, they're going to be back, so you can't, like, forget them, you know? And, like, the brain goes through so much, and I think so much overthinking and pain and just coping and figuring it out. All of it. And so I think that really goes back to the idea that time is the only true remedy. Like, it's sad to say, but you're gonna get used to it. Like, you're gonna figure it out. And, you know, that time's gonna have to come into play.
For sure.
So I think today we focused a lot on just, you know, finding that support system you need, and also coping and coming into yourself and knowing yourself so that you can do well in a relationship. Do you have any other advice for somebody in a long-term relationship or long distance?
Gosh, I think just knowing that there's pros and cons to long distance relationships. I think if you really focus on, this is a cool opportunity for me to really work on taking care of myself, and an opportunity to really build up verbal intimacy, intellectual intimacy, even psychological intimacy, you know, building trust, because, you know, to be away from each other and still stay loyal to each other says a lot about you as a human, and it says a lot about your relationship. So if you could focus on those positives and just know there will be challenges, especially with the lack of oxytocin, you know, without those really, like, face-to-face, in-person interactions. And so when you are together, just try and bulk that up as much as possible, you know, and then just know that there's going to be a lot of grief and a lot of hurt and a lot of loneliness, and find other friends and therapists or other people to help you get through it.
Yeah.
They're, you know, the research shows that long distance relationships are as successful or more successful than in-person relationships. Okay. You know,
so
not to get discouraged about it, it just has its unique set of challenges. Yeah.
So acknowledge that there's going to be pain, but remember the good and see the good in it.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Okay. Well, thank you for coming on with us today. Okay.
Thank you.
We'll see you all for episode 3 next week. Thanks, guys. Thanks for joining us today. I'm your host, Bri, and I can't wait for the next episode with you. See you then.